This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
You woke up the snow, got yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen one.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, a lot of the eyes of the world are still on Hollywood. People debating what happened at the Academy Awards. Was it a good show? Was it a bad show? Were the movies that won deserving? Were there films that should have won that didn't? Well, we have two entertainment professionals par excellence who are not only very experienced in the world of entertainment, they're just such larger than life characters. And if you want to talk about two guys that epitomize what it is to be an outer borough white ethnic, I don't know that you can find two guys better than the fellas that have joined me in studio. First, let me welcome a gentleman who's been on the show before, no stranger to this audience, the host of the TV talk show Up Late with Johnny Potenza. What are the chances? The one and only Johnny Potenza. Johnny, it's great to talk to you. Great to have you back.
My man, Frankie Boy Morano. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. It's good to see you again.
You
yeah,
too.
You're looking well. And you brought a special guest for us, somebody that I've been a fan of for a long time.
Yes.
Somebody that is an actor, a writer, a producer, a man whose work includes regularly appearing on The Sopranos and Law & Order SVU, Lou Martini Jr. Lou, it's great to see you.
Great to be here. I've been a big fan of yours, too, for many years.
Well, there's no accounting for
taste. I don't sleep. So what am I going to do? I listen to you because I don't sleep.
Whatever we can do to put you back to sleep, we're going to try and do that. Now, so for people that don't remember Lou Martini Jr. from the role that I first became a fan of his as on The Sopranos, here's a little bit of Lou as Johnny Sack's son-in-law on The Sopranos.
He changed the terms.
What, the bigger piece for his fat mouth?
No, smaller, actually. But it's the house. He wants you to unload it to his sister at a reduced price. Half, actually. But the New Orleans thing, he'll knock 2% off his finder's fee, and he'll make sure those pricks sell.
I guess beggars can't be choosers. And the worst part is, I got to sell the idea to Ginny somehow.
Lou, let me begin.
I got to correct you first of all. It's brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law.
Right.
When it's this late at night, believe me.
Yeah, no, I understand.
The fact that I can even know my own
name. Myself, I'm a little tired.
But there was sort of a patriarchal view that Johnny seemed to have towards your character. I mean, that's why in my brain it was father-in-law.
Well, the great thing about that role is because, you know, again, being stereotyped in this business like we often do, whether it be stereotyped as a mobster if you're an Italian or a bank robber if you're an African-American or a drug dealer, something like that. The great thing, and I was so happy to take this role because my character was not a mobster. He sold eyeglasses for a living. And basically because of circumstances, happening to be the brother-in-law of a mob boss, he wound up being in the wrong place at the wrong time and being a go-between. So it was a great character. I got to not play a mobster for a chance for a while, which was just fantastic.
Now, you played plenty of gangsters in your life, but what I liked about that role is because, you know, every actor that's of Italian descent, whenever they're on a show or a movie that's affiliated with organized crime, you're always asked the question, oh, does that make Italians look bad? And I'm going to ask you that question a little bit later. But what I liked about that character is they go into your eyeglass store and Tony is basically just taking eyeglasses without any sort of qualms. You're really being taken advantage of.
Well, great backstory,
by those same
great
folks.
Frank. Great backstory with that is that was my first day on the set. I was 45 minutes late because they gave me the wrong location. I was in a car accident on the West Side Highway going there, so I'm thinking I'm getting fired on my first day. So I get the set. Jimmy couldn't have been nicer. Welcome to the family. It was fantastic. But with that scene in particular, is there was a huge discussion with the showrunners and everything because Jimmy's take on it, he says, look, I'm a mob boss. I would pay for the sunglasses. I wouldn't steal sunglasses from this poor guy who's trying to make a living. So the next time you watch that scene, go back, and the way Jimmy played it brilliantly, you really can't tell if he left his wallet in the car, huh, or he's just saying he left his wallet in the car. Yeah, I mean, he pretty much walked both sides of the line to make the director and the showrunners happy because he was totally against being the guy that would steal sunglasses from the working guy.
I think he was being a smart guy, and he did forget his wallet in the car, and he was going to be anyway.
If you go watch it now, you can't tell. That's the brilliance.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah.
Now, I also remember you were in one of the only Sopranos episode that had Sidney Pollack in it, which was a great episode, one of my favorites. Mm. I know that Sidney Pollack did most of his scenes with Johnny Sack because they were both
Vince
in prison.
Curatola, the great
did you
Vince
get
Curatola.
To meet Sidney Pollack?
No, I didn't work
all?
With him at all. As a matter of fact, the only people I worked with on the show was that day. Is when I got to work with Michael and Stevie and Jimmy. But everything else was all Jimmy and all Vince because I was a go-between the two characters. So I'd go see Vince in the prison or the hospital after he got sick, and then I'd go back to Gandolfini and talk about what Vince wanted me to relay the messages and stuff. You know, the coffee with the chicory and the birthday cake and all that stuff was a lot of fun. But I only got to work with those two guys, really, basically.
And I want to bring my friend Johnny Potenza in a second. And if people want to catch up on what Johnny's doing, you can check him out on Facebook. Just search Johnny Potenza Official. A lot of great clips and everything on there. You can also check out Lou's website if you want to see his whole sizzle reel of a lot of the great roles that he's played, including a lot that you'll recognize. It's LouMartiniJr.com. Martini spelled just like the drink, JR.com. Lou, I learned recently that you're the only actor to actually have a speaking part on The Sopranos and The Godfather Part 1.
Correct.
Lot of folks remember Dominic Chianese, who was Johnny Ola in Godfather Part 2. A lot of folks may remember
Tony Lip, the great Tony Lip. He was in Godfather, but he didn't have any lines.
That's
yet.
Right.
He was Richard Conte's henchman in the wedding scene.
But so I'm picturing Robert Duvall, James Caan, Al Pacino, Marlon Brando. I don't remember the Lou Martini role in The Godfather.
Because if you sneezed, you missed it. But I was playing my age. It's the wedding scene where James Caan is taking the bridesmaid upstairs in the house to go, do the nasty. And these two little boys run by him and we're making little boy sounds. And I run around the wedding cake in the kitchen. And that was me. And the reason I got that role is my dad was supposed to play Luca Brasi. My dad was an actor, fantastic song, dance man, great actor, was hired to play Luca Brasi, got sick, had a stroke, got sick on the set. They took him home. He died shortly after that, was replaced by the great Lenny Montana.
Wow.
Did a fantastic job. And now, even now, if you go back and I watch the wedding scene, I've got like 10 or 12 or 15 of my dead aunts and uncles and cousins that are in that movie because my dad got everybody extra work in the movie. He got me the role of the little boy at the wedding.
That's incredible. Johnny Potenza is here. If you haven't seen Johnny Potenza's TV talk show, you can just put it in YouTube and it comes right up. There's a lot of great stuff on there. I've been fortunate enough to be a guest myself. Johnny, we alluded to the Oscars. A lot of people talking about what kind of job Jimmy Kimmel did as the host. I think this is his third or fourth time hosting. Yeah. You're a host yourself. What do you think?
You know what it is? I'm more of an old school, late night fan and the talk show host going back to Joe Franklin, Johnny Carson, Leno and all those cats, Steve Allen. But he's all right. I mean, it's like the same old stuff every year, if you ask me. You know, if I was able to pronounce everybody's correct last name, I would do a better job. Because I'm terrible with vowels. But, I mean, I miss the old school guys like Billy Crystal. I mean, I think they should give somebody else a different shot. Like someone that's really funny. That's going to keep the politics out of it. I mean,
that's all it is. It's the one joke. It's the best Trump night, and that's what it is.
Why do we got to bring politics in? Yeah. You know, entertainment.
But unless I missed something, right? I only caught two political jokes. I caught the shot at Katie Britt at the beginning, and then when Trump put out a tweet on Truth Social, Jimmy Kimmel read the tweet and said, "Isn't it past your jail time?" I mean, for what we've seen lately in Hollywood,
it's calmed down.
It's not that much.
It has calmed down.
No, you are. Right, and I recorded it, so I only watched part of it, so I still got to watch Sylvester. Gotcha. But I've been seeing a lot of clips.
Gotcha. Well, I'm glad to have you here, Johnny, because you are one of the probably the greatest expert when it comes to the band Kiss that I know of. Right?
I don't know. Says absolutely. That knows me, but I'm one of the, in the Kiss army.
So now where the whole world, Hollywood, radio, lawyering, everybody, musicians, everybody's preparing for the world of AI, and everybody, myself included, is terrified about being replaced one day by AI.
Yeah.
Gene Simmons and Kiss, they seem to be maybe one group that's jumping towards AI.
They jumped on the wagon.
So they're apparently going to have an avatar, some Kiss avatars, play concerts.
Yes.
What do we know about this, Johnny, and how do you feel about this as a fan?
The last two shows at the Garden, I only got to go to the first night. I was going to go to the second night, but I couldn't because it was my uncle's 60th. But anyway, at the end of the concert, the last couple of concerts, they showed at the end, once Kiss got off the stage, it goes, in the future. And then all of a sudden, it shows the making of the avatars, and they looked really damn good. And they're advertising it now, so they estimated to come out in 2026, full tour. I don't know. It's just going to be off the hook.
Like, Gene Simmons is one of the great entrepreneurs of all time. Guy knows how to make a buck.
That's for sure. Brilliant marketer.
It's all about marketing with Gene Simmons. He's a genius.
We mentioned Al Pacino before. He was featured Sunday night at the Oscars reading, sort of controversially, the Best Picture winner. A lot of folks said he didn't deliver it with the kind of panache that folks were expecting.
Right.
What'd you think of the Oscars?
Well,
the movies that won or the ceremony
itself?
Give
him a break. He's 80-something years old now. God bless him. He's one of the finest actors of our time, if not the finest. And just to see him up there in front of everybody, it's a wonderful thing, you know. So God bless. I mean, he didn't screw anything up. He didn't say the wrong name, right? I mean, there's been rumors of people saying
the wrong name. Right, Warren
Jack
Beatty
Palance
did that. Right,
and,
exactly.
Other people saying the actual wrong name. So he got it right. And maybe he fumbled a little bit, but he got it right.
You know what? A lot of people want to hear him go off the hook, say something funny. It's like Jack Nicholson going up there and not doing something funny.
Right, I get you. Right? No, I completely agree.
Yeah, like you want him to be like, hoo-ah, or whatever, like, you know, just do something.
Lou Martini Jr. is here. Johnny Potenza is here. Lou, I was reading that your mom, unlike a lot of stage moms who push their children into show business, she didn't necessarily want you to go into acting right away after your starring role in The
Godfather.
Because
she saw the worst of it. I lost my dad when I was young. I lost my dad when I was 9.
Sorry.
And I worked a lot. Thank you. I worked a lot when I was a kid. But my mom, being a single mom, pretty much took me out of the business because she had to go to work. And again, she wasn't fond of the business because my father died pretty much penniless, you know. I mean, it's a really, really rough racket. Once he got sick the last few years, he didn't work. And she was kind of turned off by it. And then what really turned her off by it was when I was in college and I was getting back. I decided to get back into acting. When I came back to New York, I went to school at University of Houston. I was going to be a sportscaster at this time in my life. I decided to come back to New York because I didn't want to take a sportscasting job in Pikeville, Kentucky. I had an offer to do radio, and I said, I think I'm going to go back to New York and do the acting thing. But she approached a casting director who will remain nameless. No, will name, how do you say it? Remain nameless. There
sure,
you go.
Right.
Remain nameless. And she said, hey, you know, my son just got back to New York. He's looking to get back into business. And basically, he told her to not even look him up. Not to be bothered. And this is a guy that my dad would get locations for, would get cast for, did him every favor in a book.
But that didn't turn you off.
I was upset about it till the day he passed, but I wound up working for him through a director hiring me twice on two projects that he was casting, but he didn't cast me. The director hired me twice on two different projects, but my mom was turned off by it. And, you know, why wouldn't she be? You know, this is supposedly a family friend saying, oh, he doesn't want to be in this business. It's a dirty, rotten business. Tell him not to do it.
But it sounds like given some of the experiences that you've had, some of what he was saying might have had a kernel of truth.
Absolutely. You know what? Like any profession, there's the good and there's the bad. There's the good people, there's the bad people. You know, the one thing I notice, and me and Johnny talk about this all the time, is I find in this business, and Johnny has agreed with me, usually the bigger people that you meet in the business, the bigger stars that they are, the bigger cachet, the nicer they are. It's the mid-level guys who think, you know, it's the Italian-American actors in New York who think they're Al Pacino and they're not. Believe me, you're not. Those are the guys that you have the problems with usually, right, John?
Yeah, no, it's tough. You know, people think they're bigger than what they are, but, you know.
Radio, same thing, by the way. I can't tell you how many radio stars think they're radio superstars.
You know what it is? It's just with the acting, it's like so big of It's like the world. I mean, technically, there's all different races and ethics and nationalities all over the world. So you could be 1 year old, you could be 120 years old, big, small, fat, black, white, yellow. It's just so many people.
But, John, who's the one ethnic group that doesn't stick together in this business?
No, it stinks because
Italian-Americans and I'm Italian
with the actors. See, I don't look at myself as an actor. I could go into it, but if I do anything else for free, I'll be in the poorhouse. Because, you know, half of my life I was in the music business. And by the time that whole journey that was great was over, I was starting life over again at 39 years old. You know,
I can empathize. Believe me, I totally get it. Hey, by the way, you're starting a new season of Up Late with Johnny Potenza. What can people look forward to seeing on the new season?
Well, this is the situation. I've been doing this a while now. I mean, me and you met there years
ago. Yeah, 25 years ago, I think, thereabouts.
Yeah, and when I started Late Night, it was in 2008, did that 10 seasons. Then I started Up Late, and then we got hit with the pandemic. But I'm at the point now, and I should have did this a long time ago, where I really need to say, am I going to make this a hobby and stay here? But I always wanted to take it to the next level, but kind of got stuck after this COVID when we had investors, we lost investors. So now, since COVID, we lost like half our staff down there. Mm. So now I have to get my feet wet more than what I'm supposed to. But it's public access. It's PBS. You got to get your feet dirty. But I'm starting to not have as much fun as I used to. Because I can't concentrate on just being the host. I got to be the director.
Right. I know. You're the producer. You're everything. Yeah, I totally get it.
I'm the shoemaker. So, I'm making coffee in between.
You're preaching in the choir, Johnny. I get it. And as far as what the audience can expect, is there anything you're excited about that they should keep an eye out for?
Right now, we're stepping back. Instead of doing every month, we're going to do every other month. And then we're going to be running repeats. But I'm in production, and I already started writing it. I got a film crew, which I'm not going to mention their names yet until we start production because you know how that goes. I'm in production for a documentary of the show. It's going to be the behind the scenes of a making of a public access show. Show the world and the public what it really takes to put a late night show together.
I'd love to see that.
Not just a talk show. What the grind, the hustle, the grind, the good and the bad. The ugly,
they're going to show and you go picking up the big
stamina, you know, the coordination, the bookings, the editing, the rat reel, the grind. My favorite
is when, you know, you have a whole show booked around a certain guest and then they cancel last minute. All right. I mean, is that something that you dealt with?
Honestly, there is only one guy that's a friend of ours. I'm not going to mention his name because he's a friend of ours, but he's known in the business for canceling. But honestly, 99 out of 100, God knock on wood, I was good. Maybe like a Joe Schmo might have to cancel, but my main guest, no.
That's wonderful. That's great.
I got lucky. You got to remember, it's only once a month. If I was getting paid, I would do it every day.
Sure. No, I get it. I get it. Believe me.
I can't do it.
So you'll keep us posted on that documentary.
100%.
So Johnny Potenza is here. Lou Martini Jr. is here. Lou, obviously, I know you were only in, I guess, the last season of The Sopranos.
Yeah, I did 5 episodes, season 6.
A very integral story arc in that episode. Mm. Recently, there was the 25th anniversary of The Sopranos and a lot of look back articles about why the show has endured, why the show was so popular, why so many younger people that weren't even alive when the show debuted have taken to watching it. I'm sure you've given this some thought over the last couple of decades since you've been involved with the show. Why do you think The Sopranos has endured?
I think it struck a nerve. I think in so many other TV shows and movies of that genre, it kind of romanticized organized crime. I mean, even The Godfather is a wonderful movie, but it's kind of a romanticized version of the Corleone family and Michael Corleone. The Sopranos, the thing about The Sopranos was it was real, it was gritty, and I don't know how Gandolfini pulled this off, but if you think about it, he's a horrible human being. Mm. He's a murderer, a liar, an adulterer.
But
everybody loved Jimmy Gandolfini. Everybody loved Tony Soprano. There was something lovable, and people could relate to these characters. People related to all those characters on the show.
Almost like a John Gotti. Like,
don't even start with him.
Johnny
P's love for John Gotti.
Well, he loves the Gottis, too. So you would be tell him what you said. And Frank's friends with them.
Well, some more than others. You know,
we were at, I think we were at our friend Gaetano's party.
I'm a Gotti fan. I like Gotti. What are you going to do? He was one of my favorite gangsters.
Well, look, but I think there's... well, I don't want to get into a whole Gotti discussion because the audience has roasted me over
But Johnny P has an obsession for Johnny. He has a deep love for the guy, and I don't get it.
We'll continue that conversation off air because I've gotten my fair share of slings and arrows on that front as well.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Handling legal matters is stressful. So, let the law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. provide you with the insightful counsel you deserve. The law offices of Frank Bruno Jr. has successfully handled thousands of cases for 25 plus years. They focus on elder law and estate planning, but are equipped to navigate you through all stages of family law and divorce to real estate law and probate. The law offices of Frank Bruno. Call 718-418-5000 or visit them at frankbrunolaw.com. That's frankbrunolaw.com. Frank Bruno. He's your numero uno.
But, Lou, as far as, so you think The Sopranos was sort of a more honest look at that kind of
It was real, just like the movie Goodfellas. I mean, Goodfellas was really, really the first mob movie to be really authentic. I mean, you know, showed the blood and guts and the ugliness of it, you know, of that lifestyle. And like I said, you know, first of all, the writing, The Sopranos writing will never be matched. They're just the writing. Terry Winter and Matt Wiener and all those guys. Matt Wiener. I always say Matt's name wrong. I think it's Wiener. Sorry, Matt, if you're listening, but he's one of the guys that hired me. But again, I thought the characters were relatable. Yeah. And what Jimmy Gandolfini did with that role, for you to like a guy that was that bad, it's just impossible to do, and he did it.
And excuse me, let me jump in. Like, The Sopranos, every character is great. Like, you know, Paulie Walnuts.
Right, now that you're right.
You got Silvio. Everybody was a character and a half. Like, what's his name? Tony's cousin, okay, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, Steve was great. It's Tony Blundetto.
Right. No, that was he was a wonderful character. And the episode that he directed, The Pine Barrens,
he directed one of my best episodes
in history of TV. What was he like as a director, Steve Buscemi?
Very specific, very direct. Knows what he wanted, which is great. Very prepared. Knew exactly what he wanted. I did the wedding episode with him. He directed.
I love that episode. That's
Johnny Sack wedding.
Yeah, no, I remember it. I remember.
I played background on that. Yeah, I was in the background.
As a matter of fact, you got more camera time than I did, and I'm a relative. Basically, my agent was so pissed because they didn't want to spend the money to give me my quote on that episode, and the excuse was, well, you know, we have 1,500 extras. I was like, well, what do I care? Why am I not at the table?
You want to laugh?
I just did five episodes, and I'm the guy's brother-in-law. How
That's
am I not
very
at the table?
Funny.
At that thing, this is fast. I got up to go to the bathroom. I had the best seat. Tony Soprano and everybody was right there. I was at the next table. I get up. I come back. A girl was sitting there. And I go, excuse me, that's my seat. And was like, all right, we're going to be filming soon. And I go, come on, that's my seat. She goes, no. And the guy sitting next to me goes, all right, just, I go, and then I wanted to start fighting. You know, because this goes back 20 years ago.
But why is why did she sit there without the AD saying
that? No, she jumped right in my seat. She jumped right in my seat.
And the AD didn't do anything.
The guy was sticking up for, and it was, everybody sit in your seat or leave.
Oh, God.
I'm just picturing being the other guy that you have a chance of sitting next to Johnny P or someone else, and then someone else happens to be a pretty girl.
A hot girl.
I can't imagine why. I can't imagine why he took her side.
But that was a skelly move. But you know what? I might have did that skelly move back then, too, if someone jumped up.
I don't doubt it. Hey, before we get out of we'll run out of time, two last things I want to go over with you, Lou. You're a regular on Law & Order SVU. My friend
a recurring role.
My friend Joe Piscopo said if he could do only one thing, he would just do Law & Order episodes.
I thought Joe did one a while
back.
Oh,
he did. He's done a bunch.
Joe's done a few.
Because he said you don't have the work of being in every scene, but you get paid like it's a network TV show, but it's an ensemble cast, so it's not necessarily the heavy lifting as if everything is on your shoulders.
Let me tell you, they're a machine. Literally, you could be in the makeup chair. From makeup chair to when you're finished and walking out the door could be 3 hours, because they are the crew and everything is a machine. They know exactly what they're doing, exactly what they're going to shoot. rehearse, shoot it, done. You're done. It's a wonderful set to be on. You're done.
That's another franchise, almost, you know, unlike anything since maybe Bonanza, that has had this kind of longevity and sparked this many spinoffs. What is it about Law & Order that captivates the attention of the American, not even the American
25
public?
Years
I was in
now.
Italy, and they were showing episodes of Law & Order, and apparently people loved it out there, too.
Well, it started out as a ripped-from-the-headlines type of show, you know, where basically they're storylines were very similar to stuff that happened in the news.
I know. They did an episode on my friend Curtis being shot by John Gotti.
Right. They do that.
So people pick up the paper. They see a story. Then they look at a TV gun. It's like, wait a second. I just read that in the paper 2 days ago. Let me put this on. I think that had a lot to do with it in the beginning. And now it's just become just a classic show with Mariska and everybody. Again, the writing is wonderful. The acting, the directing is wonderful. And they're going to go 30 years. You hear it from me. This is what I was told. They're going to go 30 years.
30
wow.
years.
I just did my 20th episode of The Family. And my fifth is Ron Fredo, the attorney I play on this
show. And if people want to check out what Lou's doing, you could check him out at loumartinijr.com. One of the things that you'll find on there, one of Lou's many illustrious television highlights, happens to be this gem.
How are you more upfront with women than you are most men?
Basically, to be honest, a lot of guys out there, there's a lot of creeps out there and liars and cheats, and basically I'm right up front immediately.
And you're the good guy.
I'm a good person. I tell them my situation up front.
Well, what is your situation?
Right now in Southern California, I just moved here, and I don't have a car right now, and not a lot of money trying to find my way, and I'm, a lot of women may be turned off by that, you know.
Well, they will be.
Yeah.
Sorry to break this to you.
You might be one of the few people that I've met in person that has been on Love Connection. What was that like? That must have been a hoot.
Well, when I first moved out to L.A. and I spent 10 years out there, the first couple of years, I did a lot of reality TV to pay the bills, you know.
What year?
I did Love Connection in 92, I want to say. Right. And long story short is me and that girl, she was a wonderful girl. We actually had a real relationship.
Wow.
We were sleeping together. We had a relationship for about 3 weeks from the first date to when – yeah, go on Google on YouTube. The both episodes are on YouTube. It was very, very funny. But they asked me to marry her on the show.
Really?
And I was trying to make the show happy, but I wasn't going to ask the girl to marry me on the show. I wasn't going to do it.
Was that real or was it fake?
The emotions were real, but I was not going to ask the girl to marry me on the Love Connection. And she's doing well. I heard she's in Idaho, married with a couple of kids. She's a wonderful girl.
Who and presumably a husband she didn't meet on Love Connection.
No.
Okay,
fair enough.
Lastly, let me ask you both about this, since you both have a lot of expertise in television. The numbers for television are not looking great. Cable television, network television, the audience for just about everything except live sports is down considerably, and more people are cutting the cord and doing away with cable entirely. Additionally, for the first time, we're seeing a little bit of a leveling off in streaming. It looked like every year streaming was going up, up, and up. Now that people aren't stuck in the house all day with the pandemic, now even streaming has cut back a little bit. What are you guys seeing as the future of television? What's television or entertainment going to look like? How are people going to consume it? And, you know, are you optimistic as guys that make, you know, a lot of your living or your passion in TV?
The thing is this, I love the streaming. I love all these new networks because these streaming networks are pretty much taking the place of like these big movie studios. Like when The Irishman was first coming out, Paramount had it for whatever it was.
A week.
What was it, $100 million, $125
million? Oh, the budget, yeah.
And then Netflix took it for $200 million. But Netflix is huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Paramount. But I don't do cable no more because they charge so much money.
Right. For channels you don't want.
They don't give you nothing. Right. They repeat the same old nonsense where you can get it all and get a third of the package when you with apps, and that's what I do. And then there's certain apps like Hulu will get 7, and you get this one that has 11, and so you kind of have to know how to break it up. I wish cable would lower their prices, and they all get together, and they just give you an affordable bundle, and then at the end of the day, everybody will be happy. But it's greed. It's greed.
And that's why, like you said, Frank, that's why even streaming now has leveled off, because if you notice, in the last 2 to 3 years, all the streaming services are raising their rates. You know, and it's a tough economy right now.
That's for sure.
It's about rates, and it's about convenience too. The reason that cable will be dead in 10 years, maybe less, is because people want to watch stuff on their time now.
Yeah.
You know, why do I have to sit in front of the TV at 8 o'clock when I can wake up tomorrow at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and just press the button and watch.
Again, we see a lot of that in radio as well. A lot of people that used to make a habit of staying up late because they wanted to hear not just me, but you know, whoever, whatever show they wanted to listen to. Now they think, all right, I'll listen to it. I'll go to bed whenever I want, and I'll listen to it when I wake up. And you know, on some level, that's great.
That's great
in that people can listen to whatever they want, whenever they want. And on the other level, it does take away a little bit of something between the intimacy of what you're doing on TV or radio and the person consuming it. Hey, this was a lot of fun. Johnny Potenza, watch out for that new documentary. Check out the new season of Up Late with Johnny Potenza. You can just search Johnny Potenza on YouTube. Comes right up. And a real pleasure, Lou Martini Jr. Great to meet you.
Oh, sincerely, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
Yeah, yes, Frankie, absolutely. Thank you. And I'll see you really soon. But I'll see you in the neighborhood.
I look forward to that. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to give me a call. 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.